I made it pretty clear that my intent with this was that nobody makes a dime, because I think once that starts happening, it becomes something else.
You are listening to the Ghosts and Horses Radio Hour, neither a radio program nor an hour. Interviews and stories, with and without jokes. Modest sound design, pure intentions. I can only do my best.
I find myself to be a tremendous fan of things. I have a lot of friends that, you know, I love their art, I love their writing. Maybe they make silly cartoon strips. Like, I just find that I love a lot of things, and I want people to know about them. So rather than spam my Facebook feed or, you know, emailing people a bunch of links being, hey, check out this, I just wanna kind of package it all in one thing and share it with everybody. I'm not really trying to do anything other than that.
This is Mark Wagner. He's a Sioux Falls-based illustrator and designer. Mark co-publishes the quarterly art, music, and creative writing zine Skullmore with his partner, Les Cotton.
I started making zines 4 years ago after I went to a conference in Dallas and saw Kate Bingman Burt talk about zines and how she makes them, and I went to a little zine workshop, and so as soon as I got back, I started making them. I make a lot of illustrations and drawings, and so what I like to do is, after, you know, I fill up a sketchbook or whatever milestone I reach, I will scan them and make them into a zine, which is basically just a little booklet that you print and distribute on your own. And that's really the only thing I think is required for something to be classified as a zine, is that you are the publisher and that you are doing as much of it as you can yourself. Okay. Websites are definitely easier. I think, at least for me, we could have easily made Skullmore like a blog or something. But as opposed to maybe 10 years ago, I think it's a lot harder to get people to look at your blog than anything, because everybody's got a blog or a website or something. And if you make something tangible and leave it around town for somebody to find, I think there's something really special about that. I think there's a little bit more of an element of surprise involved. And that's why we kind of like try to keep the cover very, you know, there's some artwork, but then there's just a little logo, and then it's just volume one and free. Because I don't want there to be expectation. I want them to just be like, well, what is this? And then open it up and kind of explore. It seems like there's a lot more rules and with like a web page. You know, you start at the top, you scroll down, you click next page.
I feel like there was a time, like what you said, like probably about 10 years ago, where the idea of sort of self-publication in a digital realm was really liberating, because you kind of removed all these gatekeepers. And then now it just seems, I don't necessarily want the gatekeepers back, but I want a little bit of effort in the stuff that I'm looking at. I want to know that it wasn't something that was just thrown together.
Yeah, well, I think it's sort of like, I think the gatekeepers have moved. So now they're in front of the digital realm. Like, if Tumblr, you know, the Tumblr site goes down for a couple hours, my content is unavailable to people that want to view it. You're giving up some control of how your artwork, how your craft is perceived.
And I think some of the individuality.
Definitely. You know, there's no theme selected here. We have our own layouts. We set the magazine up however we want, and we can just roll with it. It's kind of a, I mean, there's only downside is that printing is kind of expensive.
Scomore is financed through sponsorships, individual donations, and ads. Ads that are hand-drawn by Mark. Mark and Les considered, but ultimately decided against using crowdfunding platforms like Kickstarter and Indiegogo to fund Scomore's printing. After he mentioned this, Mark indulged me while I used the opportunity to complain, old man style, about the ubiquity and laziness of online crowdfunding for creative projects. I've got pretty strong, but also conflicted feelings about using Kickstarter. And so I'm curious about your feelings on it. Like, you said you wanted to stay away from Kickstarter. What do you feel like Kickstarter's impact has been on, or any kind of crowdfunding on creative projects? Like, how do you think that's changed the way artists do things?
I think, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to sound too harsh, but I think it makes people work a little less hard. Where you could totally raise money from people, you know, donations or grants or whatnot, but I think it kind of just takes a little bit of the... It makes it a little too easy.
It feels like almost a matter of semantics when you say it out loud, but there's a really big difference between saying, I made something, or I'm going to make something, and I think that it's worth you purchasing, and saying, I will make something if you give me money to make it. You
know? Right.
And that's challenging to me, because there and I think that there are different, for me it's a matter of scale too. There's, yeah. I remember being in a band when I was, you know, 16, and we pressed vinyl records in the mid 90s when it was hard to do that and it was expensive to do that, but we wanted to have a record. And so we played a bunch of shows that paid $50 each, and we worked our like crappy 16-year-old jobs, and then we put out the record. And then we made the money back, you know, and that because we sold the records. But, you know, there's this investment of time and energy and resources. And so it drives me nuts when I see four grown men saying, doing a Kickstarter for $1,500 so they can record their EP.
Yeah.
I think, like, if you can't scrape together $1,500 between four adults,
yeah,
then... And if your band, like, if you can't gig enough to cover the cost of recording, then maybe there's not enough demand for what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that 100%.
And I always feel kind of like an a-hole when I say that.
I do too, because, like I said before, it's not because they're not passionate.
Yeah.
It's just sort of, it just seems like it's not necessary. 100% of the money that we raised went towards printing. With this, I wanted to make sure that it could be free for a number of reasons, mainly so that it'd be more accessible to people, but also because I didn't want to go to like 30 places and go, all right, how many did you sell? And like, all right, you get 50 cents, I get 50 cents next. That just seemed very unnecessary. Yeah, I think kind of putting profit behind what you're trying to do, not concerning yourself with profit, is definitely an aspect of the zine culture. I made it pretty clear that my intent with this was that nobody makes a dime, because I think once that starts happening, it becomes something else.
My husband Dan and I always dreamed of a new venue in Sioux Falls. He's been a musician for years and years, and we felt like there wasn't a music or art-centered space to present anything anymore.
This is Liz Nissen. Just over a year ago, Liz, her husband Dan, and their friend Brogan opened an exclusively all-ages music venue and record shop in downtown Sioux Falls. Before she continues, please take a moment to think about what it would be like to walk into a bank in the year 2014 and ask for a loan to open a music venue that won't sell alcohol, caters largely to teenagers, and plans to subsidize the fact that it pays 100% of its cover charges to the musicians who perform there, with the sale of vinyl records and the occasional cassette tape. Liz, Dan, and Brogan knew how that would sound too. That's why they didn't go to a bank.
Dan had a small retirement fund from SIDS, so we cashed that out and used that, and we had a little tax return, and, you know, Dan, Brogan, and I each had to put in probably a couple thousand of our own money and just did it. Yeah, we're a year in. Ends are meeting. We didn't lose too much money last year, and we're feeling really good about it. Record sales are super strong. The store is going really well, which allows us to keep booking bands and doing more shows. We don't take any money from shows. Maybe $20 to cover our flyer costs. Oh. But yeah, no. All the door money goes to the bands.
For years, there hadn't been a consistent all-ages venue in Sioux Falls. Now Total Drag puts on 2 to 3 shows a week, and business is good.
Yeah, and honestly, like, all day long, we're pretty much steadily busy. Like, when we first started, there would be days when we had, like, one customer in. But now it's nonstop.
What are the bands, like the local bands, or like
the young kids bands? My favorite local band probably is Androgynous Squash.
They're a favorite.
I'm sure Mark talked about them too.
Yeah.
They're fantastic, and Lindy is like the lead singer of that band, and his newest project, Onsk, like, such a hard time saying that. They played here last night too, and they were more like an art noise kind of band. Costumes, video.
Really?
They threw meat at the end of their performance.
Originally, it was going to be like a birthing scene.
That's Lindy Wise, singer for Androgynous Squash and the aforementioned meat-tossing art noise band, Onsk Onsk.
We're all, like, masked, and we wear kind of strange dresses that we find at, you know, Savers or Goodwill, and we make our own costumes out of different weird patterned clothing we find. But the original idea is just, you know, a noise band, because I enjoy noise and Forrest enjoys noise, and we got two other people to join in. And the biggest thing was, originally it was gonna be no performance at all. It was just gonna be us standing there in our costumes, you know, with feedback blaring, and then maybe some uncomfortable crowd interaction. But now it's like a full musical endeavor, but there's still like, you know, the crowd interaction type thing.
Say the heart of the teenage kids right now are super bright and super creative, and like, I feel since we've opened, they've really, I don't know, like, grabbed the reins and are starting to get involved with Skullmore and different zines out there.
When I first got really into music, it never occurred to me about going to shows. I never heard about any shows really. I knew that there were a couple of venues around town, but they were, you know, 18 up shows, and there was a couple shows that I really wanted to go to, but I was restricted, you know. And then just last year, I always had to go to Omaha for shows, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or like the Cedar Cultural Center in Minneapolis, because that's an all-ages venue. But Total Drag opened, and now I go to shows, you know, almost every week, and I probably wouldn't be in the bands that I am now without, like, Total Drag opening, I think. Because I was in music projects before that, but again, I didn't think that anyone would book us because of the age restrictions. So when that opened up, and, you know, Dan and Liz are like the nicest people ever, so I was able to, you know, find some people that were interested in doing, you know, something cool, I think.
Probably within the next year or so, we will expand a little bit. Common Sense is planning to move to the other end of the building, so then we can kind of take over their space as well as this space. We still want to keep it small, you know, probably 95 capacity at that point, maybe pretty intimate still, expand the record area a little bit. I dream about a label. I love to, you know, put out some tapes and records of some artists that I really enjoy. And yeah, I don't know. We believe in the power of positivity and the law of attraction, and it's been great, you know. Wow. If you do it and you do it right, then people will respect that, and we feel like the people that get it support us like 150%. There's still definitely people there that don't get it, but that's okay. The ones that do get it make up for that.
Situation you got us in. Well, you never been in a fight before, like you never caused a scene. Anyway, shut up, Scott, you're not even really here. This ain't the worst we've seen. We've been through a worst of this. We will live to laugh at this. Just shut up and keep running. What did you say to make that guy so angry? Through the restaurant, their kitchen back door. The cooks look up a style of that trip across the floor. He's missing it in Scott, can you tell me the goddamn trick? Outside the restaurant, we're sizing up the fence. Am I going to get over that thing? I will do a worse of this, and I will live to laugh at this. I'm sick of it, stop burning. Jumping, move, it's scary. Sick of it, scary. Gesture up in a figure of window waves. I say hi. There's got to be some smarter way of dealing with all these creeps. Guy furrows his brow, presses his lips and says, there has never been a time when brains is not one overbrought, and we will live to see the dawn. And Scott just do not feel it.
My friend Jack says that every punk rocker has a favorite dead punk rocker, because unfortunately, there are so many of them to choose from. This is a story about my favorite dead punk rocker. His name was Matt Staub. I knew Matt first as the bass player of a band called the Sneakies. They wrote catchy, smart but snotty pop-punk songs. His nickname, in the band and in life, was Sideshow. He would snort condoms up his nose and pull them out of his mouth. He could vomit on demand, no fingers necessary. When an audience got too rowdy, he was the first to tell them to settle down, though we're all just here to have fun. Matt was also the night manager at the local branch of a well-known national copy shop chain. I don't know what the statute of limitations is when it comes to photocopy theft, so let's say that this story is fictional, and that neither I nor anyone I know, living or dead, including Matt Staub, ever participated in the theft of probably thousands of dollars worth of paper and printer toner. When I was a teenager, and all of this fictional theft was taking place, my friends and I prided ourselves, ironically, on our self-reliance. Our bands wrote our own music, we booked our own studio time, and we released records and tapes without help from labels. We even designed the artwork for our releases ourselves. But when it came time to reproduce that artwork for hundreds of cassette or record sleeves, we didn't pay a dime, thanks to Matt. When we were preparing a project, my bands and I would spend hours in the copy shop, huddled around a table, laying out album covers and lyric scenes with X-Acto knives and glue sticks. Matt would often join us to offer his feedback. He was a painter, and generally a much more talented artist than any of us, so we always listened. And because Matt was Matt, sometimes he would just stop by the table to tell us about a giant shit he had taken earlier in the day. At the end of the night, we'd hand over our crudely designed artwork. Matt would tell us to come back in a few days, and all of a sudden we had 500 covers for our 7-inch. As compensation, we'd bring him a foot-long sub from the subway in the neighboring strip mall. And it wasn't just us. Matt would provide this service to pretty much any kid in town who wanted to make something on their own. Although you could always get a sense for how much he liked or disliked the people or band he was helping by the quality of paper stock he used. There was a lot of terrible music coming out of the Sioux Falls punk scene at that time, but thanks to Matt, most of it looked terrific. When I was 16, I had an idea for a zine. It was meant to take a swing at the many vaguely political, overly serious zines that were being produced by other local punks at the time. I called it the Zoo Zine for some reason. It was short and clumsily written. I was too insecure to call it satire, so I described it as a joke zine. But it was actually the first thing I'd written that I'd hoped would be taken seriously. It was the first thing I'd written that I wanted to share with anyone beyond my teachers or my parents, the people who were obligated to encourage me. After I finished laying it out, I sheepishly brought the stack of 8x11 pages to the copy shop. I'd never actually spoken to Matt alone. He was polite, because I was a friend of his friends, but he clearly wasn't thrilled to be asked a favor by a kid he barely knew. He told me he could probably only print a couple dozen copies of the zine for me, and that it would take a few days. I said that was fine, and asked him what kind of sandwich he wanted. Matt rolled his eyes, and I slunk out the door. Anxious as I was to see the finished product, I dreaded having to face Matt again. At some point, it seemed like he would have to become fed up with playing publisher for every dumb project every dumb kid in town brought to him. So what if I was the last straw? What if my zoo zine ruined it for everyone else? I went back to the copy shop a week later, a footlong ham and cheese in hand. I hung back by the front door while Matt helped a legitimate paying customer. It was strange to see him actually do the job he was hired to do. If you didn't know better, it would be easy to forget that he wasn't paid to steal from his employers on behalf of teenagers in ill-fitting clothes. Matt noticed me across the store, and he grinned at me over his customer's shoulder. As soon as she turned to leave, Matt walked into the back room. Then he returned with two large brown cardboard boxes, filled with neatly stacked copies of the zoo zine. "There are about 200 here," Matt told me, still grinning. "I made some extras to give to my friends." I don't know the exact nature of Matt's struggles in the years before he died, but I know enough people who knew him well to know that he was loved. He had been gone for several months before I heard about it through a mutual friend. Like I said, I didn't know him well, but I think about him often, and I think about this story often. And I remember that he's gone, and I wish that he wasn't. The Ghosts and Horses Radio Hour is produced with simple tools and a pure heart, whenever time allows, which is less and less often lately. Special thanks to Mark Wagner of Skullmore. Issues of Skullmore can be found in some of the cooler places in the Sioux Falls area, like Total Drag, Cafe A Coffee, Exposure Gallery, the Ipso Gallery at Fresh Produce, and Zambro's Variety. Skullmore is currently accepting submissions for upcoming issues. If you're interested in contributing work, email Mark at mountskullmorepress@gmail.com. Mount is abbreviated, so that's mtskullmorepress@gmail.com. And if you'd like to just throw in a few bucks toward the production costs of upcoming issues, there's a jar sitting out for just that purpose at Total Drag. Thanks to Liz Nissen of Total Drag. You can go to TotalDragRecords.com for more information about their upcoming shows. And thanks to Lindy Wise of Androgynous Squash and Onsk Onsk. You can find the newest single from Androgynous Squash on Bandcamp, and you can find a video of Onsk Onsk throwing meat into their audience at Total Drag on YouTube. Both bands are on Facebook. The new Ghosts and Horses Radio Hour theme is Leaves by Blood Drugs. You can find their new self-titled album at GoodToDieRecords.com. In this episode, you also heard music from Fugazi, Androgynous Squash, and the World Inferno Friendship Society. Previous episodes of the Ghosts and Horses Radio Hour are available via iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud, and at ghostsandhorses.com, where you can also order my collection of short stories, Nickel-Plated Gold, and watch the short film My DJ, adapted from one of those stories. This has been the Ghosts and Horses Radio Hour, and I've been your host, Brian Beaver.
All right. sorry for all you fucking assholes out there that are swinging punches at kids. Fuck you. Get the fuck out of here. Come on. Come on. We're all just trying to have a good time. Fucking relax.
If you want a fist fight, we'll be waiting for you afterwards.